Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced Program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Donnie, and I have a special guest today. It is retired Chief Todd LaDuke. And I want to bring you right into the program. Welcome, Chief.
Thank you, Donnie. It's a pleasure and an honor to join you today. So I'm excited and looking forward to having a great discussion with you.
Oh, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you taking the time. And I want to jump right into it. If you would, share with our listeners a little bit, you know, as I introduce you as retired chief, but you're very active in a lot of things. But if you would, talk a little bit about your fire career and then maybe bring us up to date.
Sure. Thank you. So I've been blessed to have a great career. Started my training up in the Northeast in Massachusetts, 1986, 87, worked what's called the Merrimack Valley up there, which is right along the Massachusetts, New Hampshire border. Went to paramedic school up in Boston at Northeastern University.
Oh, yeah.
And then I like to tell the story that I had one Northeaster, as they're called up there, too many, with, you know, multiple feet of snow and howling winds and no power. So I decided maybe it was time for me to head south. My family had relocated down to South Florida. So I was very fortunate to join Broward County, Florida, EMS service at the time. As a paramedic, and shortly thereafter, fire and EMS merged, becoming Broward County Fire Rescue. So had a tremendous 30-year career in Broward County, working my way up through the ranks from firefighter paramedic to company officer and district chief, and then assistant chief and deputy chief. Chief of Operations, and retiring June of last year. And I tell the story all the time. I got one day of retirement in. I didn't pay attention to your lessons of work-life balance. I did get 18 holes of golf in on my official retirement was June 1st. I golfed on June 2nd, and then as you know, part of my passion has been firefighter health, wellness, and safety. Mm-hmm. So I joined a company called LifeScan Wellness Centers as their chief strategy officer, and I knew LifeScan very well. They for a decade I brought them into Broward County to do our NFPA, comprehensive early detection physicals. And I have colleagues that are alive today because of it. So I was offered and afforded the opportunity to join their executive team in expanding, which they're now in 25 states across the country and growing. We see 40,000, believe it or not, first responders a year, all focused on early detection physicals. So it was a great fit for myself. My work, you know, I've been, I think it's 15 years now. And I just was elected to another 3-year term. So Lord willing, it'll be 18 years of service as a board member on the International Association of Fire Chiefs board of directors in their safety, health, and survival section. So
congratulations on that.
Thank you. It was a lot of work with the election. We had, which is a great issue. Great to see the enthusiasm. We had 16 chiefs from across the country running for 3 board positions. So I was fortunate to have so much support and endorsements and just really humbling to serve chiefs from around the country, both as a board member and now my new role as Chief Strategy Officer for LifeScan Wellness Centers.
Yes. And tell us, if you will, for the listeners, the other hats you wear, husband, father, or what else? What are those other roles in life you have?
Absolutely. So, yes, I've been married to my wife, Cheryl, for next month will be our 23rd anniversary. And we're trying to figure that out in socially distant times that we're in, and where can we celebrate our anniversary and do it safely, and use that time to reconnect and balance. I've got two grown stepchildren, Billy and Amy, that live just a short distance from us. So my parents as well. I'm an only child, so very close with both my mother and my dad, and fortunate that they live about 5 minutes from us here in South Florida. So I get to spend a lot of time with family, and that's an important priority of the job, as is always part of you, but putting family first, I think, is really an important lesson for all members of the service to always focus on.
Well, that is very, very good. And one of the things with work-life balance, Todd, is that the way I've always defined it is I ask the question to first responders, are your day-to-day behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life? And, a lot of times we get so busy, and this happens in all industries. We get running a rat race or serving. For you guys, you are serving others, serving, and serving. Oftentimes, we all notice that, sometimes we don't always have our eye on those priorities. And therefore, we go off track, go off balance a little bit. If you would, share with the listeners about a time when you felt in your career that you were out of balance. And, how did you get out of balance, and how did that make you feel, and how did you sort of give yourself a course correction?
Sure, absolutely. And, let me start by saying thank you, for all the work that you've done and are doing in this vein, because I can tell you, and likely you already know this, but I'll say it again for you, it'll connect with your audience, your listeners. They don't teach this in the academy. And quite frankly, we don't probably do a good job teaching it during the course of our service as well. So I think that's changing. But, for folks like myself that have 34 years in the service, we've kind of muddled our way through this. Mm-hmm. And figured out what hasn't worked, what maybe does work, and we course correct. And probably like you, I've seen a lot of folks that when they muddle their way through this, they don't do well for a variety of reasons. And so in my case, to answer your question, I think one of the largest challenges has been unplugging. And you and I were kind of joking about that before we started recording. 5 years ago, I did not know what Twitter was. a dear friend of mine that some of you may know, the editor in chief of Fire Engineering and FDIC, Bobby Halton, asked me to do a webinar for Fire Engineering. And at the time, the question and answer session was by Twitter Town Hall, they called it. So maybe you have this old timer that's saying, what's Twitter? So Bobby's folks were great. They, got me an account. We logged in. And now I was joking with you before we started with my 4,500 followers. And I guess now I'm called an influencer, but I'm tweeting all hours of the day and night, and really find it a great way to communicate. But With social media, with staying on top of the industry, and that requires a big commitment because, you know, we're now this all hazards approach. We're dealing with pandemics. We're dealing with Category 5 hurricanes. Being on the board of directors for the IFC and taking that role very seriously because of the folks that put their trust in electing me. And then serving as the second in command of the county fire department in the 17th largest county in the country with 2 million residents under your, you know, rely on you for their public safety protection. It doesn't leave a lot of time left in the day, you know, for your marriage, for family, you know, is, you know, because you deal with first responders to do the job right. It's a 24/7 commitment, particularly the higher you go in terms of rank and responsibility. When members are ill or hospitalized or their family members, you know, there's really, as a leader, a duty to be there and support. So for me, I had to figure out, and I'm still trying to figure this out. I chuckled when I think I saw you, whether it was an article you had done or posted recently about it's okay to say no.
Yes.
And that's been a challenge for me. So, you know, probably the biggest thing, you know, my wife constantly tells me to put my phone down, stop reading, stop tweeting. And that's part of it. So there's got to be, you know, some timeout space, not only for, I call it me space. Mm-hmm. So in my case, it was figuring out, you know, what's a hobby, you know, what's something outside the job, you know, and for me, that's playing golf. I'm not good at it. I usually have to play with an attorney or a physician because I either break something or hit someone inadvertently without trying to do that. But it's, you know, an opportunity to get outside, fresh air, not being in front of a computer, not being inundated with social media, although I usually do tweet from the golf course, which I have to catch myself. And that same, you know, so I call it me time, and then focus on us time as well. And you know, that again, for me is unplugging. And, you know, again, with only so many hours in the day, I've always had, you know, trouble balancing, how do you, you know, what period of time do you unplug? You know, I've prided myself on if I get an email, I respond to it within 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. When I send an email, and sometimes I don't get a response for weeks, it boggles my mind, but, you know, I think that's probably, as responders, many of us are type A personality. Mm-hmm. You know, where in my case, you know, I've got a paramedic background, went through nursing school with my wife. So in critical care, we're very used to, you know, pushing a drug and seeing a reaction.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes just slowing down and patience, that many of those emails probably can wait, you know, 5 hours, 6 hours, maybe even it's not a priority email, you can deal with it tomorrow. So that's been a challenge for me personally, and I know for many of the folks that, you know, my fellow brothers and sisters in the service.
Yes. And I heard you in there, Todd, say about us time. Could you tell me a little bit more what you mean by that? Were you speaking of you and your wife?
Absolutely. My wife, my parents, you know, the people that are important to me in my life. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge, you know, again, is when you look at first responders, you know, we see a lot of issues with relationships.
Yeah.
Not just spouses, but, you know, extended relationships, and, you know, more so even, you know, with perhaps, you know, family members that are not dialed in actually to the service, you know, and the things that, you know, we see and deal with. So for me, it's important to have some, you know, me time that doesn't include job talk. You know, so if there's a certainly, you know, a balance in terms of, you know, sharing, you know, what you're thinking or what you're feeling. But that me time also has to include things outside of the job, that your mind's not continuously focusing on it. And, you know, it's kind of a nice refreshing, from a behavioral health standpoint, it's a very refreshing just to, you know, focus on other things and then always, you know, the job.
Yes. Yeah. Let me ask you about priorities in life. What has been the progression of your, have you noticed priorities start to, have they changed or have they grown into something different from when you were early in your career versus later in life? And what was that progression like?
Boy, that's a very loaded question, right? To answer in a short podcast, but I think the easiest way for me personally to describe it, you know, I actually went through a transformative period where I was very hard charging early in my career, you know, focused singularly on results. And if the results I wanted weren't being achieved, you know, it was just turn it, crank it up a notch. You know, in scorch the earth type approach. And, you know, there came a point where I had a great mentor who imparted on me some pretty great wisdom that transcended not only the job, but just life in general, which was, you know, people will not remember. And I think this is true. I mean, I found it to be mostly the case. People likely will not remember all your list of accomplishments, you know, that you were able to buy a new helicopter. Are you able to, you know, finance or leasing a whole new fleet? I mean, those will likely be fleeting moments that 10 years down the road, people won't remember Chief LeDuc did this or Chief LeDuc did that or... but what they will remember is how you treated them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of put a light on in my head and refocused my priorities. Hey, we probably can accomplish both things. We can probably still do great things. But it's more about being empathetic, learning people, learning who they are, what their needs are, learning their family. And then supporting them, you know, so, you know, making that, I mean, I still have people today, you know, that will tell me stories of, you know, I don't know if you remember it, but you visited my, you know, son in the hospital, or you came and saw me at, you know, 11 at night when I was admitted with chest pain. And, it kind of gave me a different perspective, not just on job relationships, but relationships in general, right? So in our respective roles, we interact with folks from all walks of life, and you know, getting to know people, and you know, respecting differences, and respecting we all have my mentor used to call it, we all have column A, which was our strengths. And we all have, you know, B columns, which are, you know, things we probably need to work on some more.
Yeah.
You know, traits and values. And when you put all those together in a team, usually good things happen, that people complement each other's strengths and weaknesses. And so for me, that was a big growing moment, both professionally as well as personally, just, you know, becoming more focused on people as opposed to, as my mentor used to say, things.
Yes. Yes. That's great advice. And Chief, how did you get that mentor that's one question. The other question I'd like to ask you, if there's a listener today that's a new chief coming in, sitting in a seat, what advice would you have for him or her when it comes to this? And I think it's about that relationship piece, most likely.
Sure, absolutely. So to answer the first part of your question, this mentor kind of fell in my lap.
Yeah.
So I was the deputy chief of operations. As I mentioned, was very hard charging. I was working for a fire chief at the time, who, wonderful person, we're still friends to this today, but was very hard charging as well. And between the two of us, you know, it was an environment that we, you know, we had challenges with, I'll say. You know, you asked my labor union at the time, they would have probably told you I was hell on wheels, just because I was very black and white. I had trouble seeing shades of gray. And yeah. We know in life, you know, many, many things, while there are black and white issues, you know, there's always the story behind the story, and learning what that is and taking the time to do that, I think makes you a better leader. So that chief that I was working for at the time retired.
Yeah.
And a new fire chief came in that was a little bit more senior, a little bit more wiser, had, you know, 40 years in the fire service. And literally he had a totally different style than I did. As I mentioned, it was all about people and relationships, and he could have gone in a different direction with myself and you know, had his pick of who he wanted, but instead used that opportunity to develop me as a leader. And I think, you know, for that advice, and I'll say my union today, that I still remain, you know, I talk to them all the time. It was almost a pivotable turning point in, you know, even with our labor relationship, you know, it opened up a whole new relationship, and I have great labor friends and support today because of that. So for new chiefs that are coming up or are in the seat currently, I think I would just hand that same wisdom down. Not necessarily that it was my wisdom, but it was imparted to me. I implemented it and it worked great. So I think, you know, the recognition, whether you're, you know, in a 40 person department, or in my case, it was 800, it's probably a little bit more work, the larger the size of the department. Yeah. But it's all, and this is true, I think, in life, not just on the job, but I think you just mentioned it in your question, was it's all about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've crossed that threshold and I'm in the private sector, you know, it's no different. Some favor that you've done or some personal thing that you've helped someone with, not that you do it for that reason, but that builds relationships and goodwill and trust. And so you got to really get to know your people, get to know, this is all about it as leaders, you know, where they're, I guess it's called servant leadership, right? I think it's referred to, but we're there to serve, not to, in my humble opinion, to be served. You know, and I think, you know, all the other stuff, if you can figure that out as a chief early in your career, kind of falls into line. You know, whether that's buying stuff for, you know, training or collective bargaining, if you remember that you're dealing with people, mm-hmm. and you build those relationships, then those people will move heaven and earth for you. You know, and they'll know that they've got a leader, and hopefully a leadership team, that cares about them and their family. And if you take those same principles, I think, and apply them to friends, family, strangers, you know, we probably have a much more genteel world than sometimes we do.
Oh, absolutely. And the servant leadership, I absolutely love. I teach about servant leadership And I admire that style. That's a style that I've always tried to do. I know when I used to run organizations, I would do that.
Sure.
One of the things, Chief, about servant leadership, though, a fundamental piece is serving for them out of a servant's heart, right? You know, you're really pouring out love to people, you know. Sure. And with that, though, is the ability to have some difficult conversations with people, right? And what I mean, if you would, talk a little bit about, because if we're really going to serve someone, right, and we're serving the fire service industry, and if we want to look at where are we, and I know we're getting better, much, much better, when it comes to our personal preventive maintenance, our self-care, right? You know, how well are we taking care of ourselves? Is that when you look at that from, how do you have difficult conversations with someone? I mean, if someone is not exercising, someone is drastically overweight, and let's not be afraid to say the word, they're obese, you know, that we have it. We have it in our country, our world. We have it in the fire service industry. The problem in the fire service industry, and you talk about this so much, is that, you know, it's killing us. You know, those preventable risk factors. So as a chief or as a captain or a just a brother or sister in the firehouse, any advice on how to have that just heart-to-heart difficult conversation?
Yeah, that's, again, a couple thoughts. You know, the whole notion of being a servant leader is as you rightly point out, and again, my mentor always used to say, you know, don't mistake my kindness for weakness.
Yes.
You know, so as leaders, and again, whether it's you don't always get to choose the times you lead in. You know, when I was second in command, we had the 2007-08 recession here in Florida, as rest of the country, but Florida in particular, South Florida, home values that funded fire and rescue services, public safety, were devalued by 50%. So as a servant leader, when you're handed half of a check or half of the revenue stream, you've got to make some very difficult decisions. You know, the servant leader part comes in with how you compassionately do that. But that's one issue. I think the other issue, and again, I keep referring to my mentor because I learned so much, was what he used to call as clear the flight deck discussions.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, I think for many, and I'm no different. Those are uncomfortable discussions in many cases, whether you're talking about discipline, whether you talk about, you know, falling short of expectations, whether you talk about, you know, we wrote a whole book on surviving the fire service. You know, you just mentioned you know, obesity in the fire service. We know from the research that, you know, the rates of obesity are higher than in general population, so firefighters. And that's not really a surprise, right? We get lots of stress, we get sleep issues. But having those personal discussions are very uncomfortable. And it's easier just to kind of ignore or, you know, place your head in the sand, or if you have to discipline someone, so, you know, sign a piece of paper, here's a, you know, disciplinary letter, here's a one shift suspension. But whether you're talking about health and wellness or expectations or performance, like any relationship, you're really doing it a disservice. And you're doing you're doing that individual disservice by not having that clear the flight deck discussion. Mm-hmm. Listen, they're particularly when you first start, they're very difficult to have. Oftentimes, those that are hearing it put up defenses.
Yeah.
But you know, once you have that, and if all parties kind of reflect, and if it's done in a manner that's respectful and with the ultimate thing being to affect a good outcome, I found personally most people reflect, you know, on it. Maybe their defensiveness will you know, die down after a day or two, and they'll reflect on that, you know, discussion. They'll probably ask other people to, you know, what do you think about this? Or and ultimately, I believe that's how you change behaviors, and in a positive way. I mean, I've seen both. I keep going back to discipline. One example, you know, you can discipline someone without having that difficult discussion, and they'll go off disgruntled with their discipline. Or you can use the opportunity to have that clear the flight deck meeting to literally, you know, change behavior, which is the goal, right? Where we don't come into work looking to hurt people or discipline people,
right?
But we want to course correct when it's needed, and that's true. And I think in relationships, that's true. And if we're talking about someone that is overweight or someone that has, you know, risk factors that, you know, we're not doing to hurt people. We're doing, you know, in that case for health, we want to see that member of the service survive a long and healthy career and then enjoy a long and healthy retirement. And, you know, if we mm-hmm. find it easier just not to say anything and look the other way, that's really, really a disservice to the individual, but to the greater, I think, calling of leadership.
Yes. No, I completely agree with you. And it takes that extra effort to really have that clear the deck conversation. But boy, do you feel better. And you get more practice at it too, right?
You do. And listen, I know, you know, you have those. They're emotionally exhausting and draining, yeah. Because you know, you put a lot of time and energy. You want to make sure you have the right tone, you say the right words. But at the end of the day, again, and you know, doing these typically around a 5 minute, you right. know, quick stop into the office. You know, in many cases, it's like peeling an onion back. Yeah. You know, some of these discussions, I've had the person we're having a discussion with say, well, you don't know what I'm dealing with in my, you know, with my family or my children, or I've got a parent that's dying with terminal. So you really, you know, need to again invest the time and the yeah. energy to have that, you know, really be a, in many cases, a life-changing discussion for people.
Oh yes. No, that's excellent. Excellent advice. And let me turn it a little bit to self-care, you know, how well we take care of ourselves in the industry as first responders. And, you know, whether we can talk about, I like using that term preventive maintenance as we do on equipment and everything. If, you know, we have a body right here and a mind, and, you know, we need that preventive maintenance, right? And the whole self-care piece. And that's actually the underlying research that I've always participated in is I use self-care as a means of, hey, if we take care of ourselves, our mind, body, spirit, do we live a more balanced life? And are we happier and feel more successful and everything? And sure enough, it sure seems like that's what goes on. But it starts with ourselves. But in firefighting and other first responders, law enforcement too, you take that oath to serve and protect your communities, and you're type A. And you push. And sometimes, and I would go out on the line to say many times, we forget that we're a part of that community and that our families are a part of that community, that we've taken that oath to serve, because we're always putting ourselves and our families on the back seat. Not always, but you know what I mean on that. But when we do that, and I, you know, and your book that you're the editor on is Surviving the Fire Service. I mean, it is just, it's about that, you know, we need to talk about self-care. We need to, you know, talk about that longevity. And because the, as you know, the data is terrible on the current retirement the number of years you get to enjoy it versus where we need it to be. If you could talk a little bit about that self-care and how it has it been important to you? Has it always been? And a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And again, I want to thank you for all your work in this area.
And bringing
this topic more into the centrist view in public safety. And again, I go back to I wish I had, and those that served before me had that. You know, here's the Surviving the Fire Service book of all the occupational things you need to be thinking about for your health.
Yeah.
We were never taught, self-care. I present, quite frequently across the country. I ask, the whole room of attendees, how many people here were ever taught, positive coping mechanisms, self-care, talk about cancer, cardiac, firefighter suicide in recruit school. And I think that's changing, but we haven't really focused on it. So I think there's a couple issues going on. You touched on one, which is, we're actually part of the community, not just the responder community, but the greater community.
Yeah.
But by nature, I think of the job and those that tend to be attracted to the job, which are folks that are problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
When someone picks up the phone and calls 911, they are looking oftentimes in the worst day of their life to have what's been turned upside down, right sided back up, and quickly. So in responders, excel at doing that. I mean, that's what we do. If you put first responders in a disaster or crisis, they're going to do their darndest to fix it. But what that also, I think, creates is this, we call it a syndrome or a thought process, but that somehow, we were in a different kind of spot, if you will, than the rest of the population, that we're immune from whether that's the things we see.
Yeah.
We're immune from the stress we face. We're, immune from the environment that we have to operate in. And that really is a fallacy. We know that today based on the research that you've done and all my wonderful, wonderful co-authors who are some of the leading, researchers out there in the country that came together to write the book, Surviving the Fire Service. So we also know from a lot of that research, since in many cases we were never taught self-care, we've gravitated to, in many cases, just things that make us feel better. So, Dr. Sarah Jenke's done a tremendous amount of work on, and is ongoing. She's just really scratched the tip of the iceberg. Coping mechanisms such as the rates of alcohol, abuse, dependency, whatever you want to call it, but unhealthy use of alcohol, of, we know, is, I think you touched on, relationship, divorce, within the service. We're now seeing, departments, implementing, training and education and healthy coping mechanisms, whether that's, on the behavioral health side, meditation, yoga, mindfulness. We have a number, technologies playing a role in some of that with apps that, to help some of those, positive coping signs. On the physical, wellness side, again, we're not invincible. So we know that when we look at first responders, we've got higher rates in many cases. I mean, cancer, we know we have a 9% higher rate of cancer than general population. We know that, the number one line of on-duty death continues to be sudden cardiac events. And we know many of those have precursors to them, you know, high blood pressure that we're not controlling, you know, stress levels we're not controlling, glucose levels, weight, lipids, all the things. So it's changing, I think, for each of us, at least for me. I'll just speak for myself and, you know, someone that's immersed in the research and lives and breathes this stuff and keeps up with it. It really, you know, requires a personal commitment. I just wrote in, and it was just published, a fire engineering article, just I think last week, on personal accountability for these, that I think it's great. I've advocated for them. I've implemented them. It's great that employers now and departments are focusing on total wellness. But at the end of the day, you know, we'll be coming out nationally with a campaign to advocate for greater inappropriate firefighter physicals. And the branding of that campaign, which was put together by a group of National Fallen Firefighters, and they use a DC PR firm, but the branding of it is you can't save others, right? Which is what we sign up to do if you don't save yourself. So that really, you know, we as responders, and I think the other thing to touch on, at least on the physical side, is when we don't pay attention to our health, and I'll use blood pressure as an example, it's different than any other profession or service. So we know in firefighters, if you have blood pressure that's not well controlled, your risk is 12 times higher of dying on the job. That's different from stockbrokers, teachers, bankers, all of whom I love. We all need stockbrokers, bankers, teachers. But it's the environment that we operate in.
Sure.
It makes it so much more important that I think everyone does, but our job that we perform kind of ups the game for us, if you will, in taking care of our own health. And I think we need to continue to drive that message home. And again, I think departments have a tremendous, tremendous role in providing the awareness, the education, and the resources. But at the end of the day, it's up to each one of us to step up to the plate. And I'm not, you know, I'm not an angel in the choir on this. You know, I myself, you know, have hit the just hit the reset button on the code. What do they call it? The COVID 20. you know, so you know, we're probably in. You know, we have more in some cases stressors today on the job. You know, when you look at challenges. So it's more important now than ever, but it, you know, sometimes it takes that wake up call. It's why I'm such a big advocate for, what we do at LifeScan Wellness Centers, with a 3-hour comprehensive, not just behavioral health, physical assessments, fitness assessments, all aimed around providing every first responder with their baseline health status. And then what things they need to really focus on from where they're at today in order to continue to improve their health and wellness. So, you know, I think education is a huge part of this. You can't expect someone who's never been taught, you know, work-life balance, or that's never been taught healthy coping mechanisms. Intuitively, you think, well, they should know that. But, you know, education and awareness is a huge component of this.
Oh, it certainly is. And I use a model, like, for my work-life balance and in my workshops, is that where I sort of try to help play a part in this whole, let's increase the trend line in health and wellness, self-care, and all of that, is that we can teach people what to do, and we can teach them how to do it. Where I try to assist is to help teach why, help them find their why. Why do you want to do it? And to find that burning desire inside, that life-changing, that transformational piece to where they, okay, this is why I need to do this stuff that I've been getting taught, you know, how to do it and what to do, is to try to figure out and help people discover why. Because that's, as you mentioned, your accountability, you know, it sure helps. It helps ourselves if we're to be self-accountable, if we have that internal motivation.
If I can digress for a short second on that, and I think you're spot on. You know, even one quick example that I saw on this on the physical side was even implementing physicals in my department, Broward County. Other than entry level, we really weren't doing NFPA 1582, 1583 physicals. So we had a lot of fear and trepidation and folks with conspiracy theories on why we wanted to do this. But like you said, motivating and why, taking the time, and I saw this firsthand with my union by my side, we did 66 station visits. So 22 stations at the time times three shifts times. Yeah. So 66 and laid out to folks, you know, here's the rates within our own department of cancer that we've had. Here's the rates of, you know, cardiac that we've had. And when you laid out and gave everyone the information, as you said, the motivation,
yeah,
the why, it became so powerful. Every naysayer against physicals, and it was almost, you could see the lights turning on.
Right.
And you know, the biggest naysayer became the biggest proponent that, wow, I didn't realize all that. And wow, the department's really just trying to do the right thing and help us, and not looking to, you know, force any of us off the job. They're just looking to keep us healthy.
Yes.
So I think that's a great, you know, can't understress that enough, that, you know, and I think, I don't know what generation you are, but I'm like, I guess the old generation. But, you know, you hear and read, and I'm not a student. I just try to keep up with reading that, you know, the younger generation coming on the job today, which flies in the face of paramilitary organizations many times, but they want to know that why.
Yes.
And I think, you know, if we're more effective at explaining that, you get a much more motivated and effective result.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think together, many of us in the industry, you know, just keep working at it, and it takes a lot of effort. But you know, I have this one quote that I like to read. It says, "Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it." And based on your experience in the fire service, and especially with LifeScan Wellness and what you see there, I mean, to help people, our listeners, really understand that why, you know, health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. And that, what a more, you know, that is a reason to jump on it. And with your experience, I imagine you have seen many people not really do much preventive maintenance on themselves, self-care. And yeah, I'm sure you have seen the terrible outcomes of that as well.
Yeah, I say this, you'll hear me say this when I present, you know, across the country, different events, as a chief with 34 years in the service, I've gone to far more funerals than I would ever have anticipated.
Yeah.
Or wanted to go to. And when I look back at them, sometimes people think this is controversial to say, but it is what it is. When I look back at them, and this is why I have such a passion. I mean, even in my own organization, when I look back at, you know, the members of the service that we've lost, in many cases, they were preventable, in my opinion.
Yes.
That was a cardiac event or whether it was a cancer, because, you know, we hadn't at the time, you know, known here's all the carcinogen reduction practices we need to be putting in place, or, you know, example, you know, a department that's not doing annual physicals and then has a sudden cardiac death. We really, in those cases, we're letting our members down. And, you know, you at one point said this, and I believe it's so true. You know, I get asked in my role now with LifeScan Wellness Centers all the time. And we're very cost effective. You know, for a 3-hour exam, what we charge, you'd be surprised how cost effective it is. But I hear all the time from departments, where are we going to find the money to do comprehensive health and wellness and physicals? And, you know, my short answer to them is you've got assistance to firefighter grants that are out there, which are, you know, $400 million a year. That's a great source. But what you said, and it applies really to work-life balance or to physical health or mental health, is I usually do say to them, we would never think of putting an apparatus on the road and then getting into it, or in the case of a rescue, transport rescue, we would never think of putting a rescue on the road with then paramedics in it and then patients in the back without doing routine preventative maintenance and repair and maintenance. And we've made the logical leap that, you know, we've got to do that, which rightly we do. And I don't hear a lot of stories around the country of people that just poo-poo preventative maintenance and repairs when they're needed.
Right.
But we do have, I mean, the last survey, it's survey research, so take it for what it's worth, but that the IFC did in 2016 on firefighter physicals, we still had 20% of the career departments in the country. And I believe the number, if I'm not mistaken, was 40% of the volunteer departments that responded to the survey. So again, it's survey research. That weren't doing some type of physical. And that left, you know, that number. And then there was a bunch that were doing physicals, but they probably weren't, you know, NFPA firefighter physicals. They were their local provider, you know, did a blood pressure check and listened to their heart with a stethoscope. So we need to, you know, there's a lot to be said for priorities in life. Right? Whether it's our discussion that we're talking about here, you know, that was one of your questions you asked in terms of values and priorities. But for a service, again, getting back to that, if you can't, you know, you can't save yourself, you're not going to be able to save others. We really have to start reevaluating priorities. And, you know, everyone will tell you, that their priority is health and wellness and safety. But, you know, again, actions are usually judged on, you know, the proof is in the pudding. So,
right.
And, you know, I look at even the FEMA assistance to firefighter grants, and this is a great tidbit for your listeners that are listening. One of the highest priorities of that grant is health and wellness and physicals. Yet I think the last I was told by FEMA, less than 5% of the requests that they receive for that money has anything to do with health and wellness and safety.
Wow.
So and obviously, you know, we've got to have training, we've got to have great apparatus, we have to have staffing. But as again, my mentor, you know, told me, is you can't have a fire department without healthy people.
Right.
So that's in keeping them healthy. You know, we usually, most of us are pretty good about doing an assessment or a physical when we hire folks. But it's then our responsibility with the individual as well to keep them healthy throughout their service. So
yeah,
some thoughts. I think a lot of it revolves around priorities.
It's a big paradigm shift within the fire service, and actually it's a bigger issue than that. I mean, the real epidemic is we just don't take care of ourselves as a population. We don't. The number one leading cause of death in the United States are preventable diseases.
For sure.
So, and that carries over. And then when we look at that, because we, you know, what do you do about something? Well, you take a pill for it. You know, you take a medication versus, well, wait a minute, how could I prevent that? Oh, I exercise and I eat healthy, you know.
You kind of opened up Pandora's box there you're absolutely right. The way, I mean, we have a culture, I believe, largely, and this probably won't be popular to say it, I'm going to say it because it is what it is. Largely on the healthcare side, largely driven by insurance organizations that, and I think this is changing, so take that with it, you know, that have built a model around treatment of disease process.
Right.
Which is, listen, if you get diagnosed with stage 1 or 2 cancer, you want treatment options and you definitely need to have them. But we need to shift to that, you know, and I think other societies are maybe more ahead of us in this, but shift to that preventative culture, you know, and look at, we know, I mean, we're seeing what's happening in cancer in the fire service now, that shift to prevention. We know, same thing with behavioral health. If we focus on prevention, in wellness, we probably would have, you know, less tragic consequences of, you know, behavioral health and firefighter suicide. So it is a mindset change. But I think it is happening. People are, you know, focusing more on prevention and wellness. And I think the more we keep talking about it, the more of a norm that it becomes.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. Hey, let me ask you we've emailed, but my son, Donnie III or D3, he enrolled, he got into the Fire One school at the local community college here in Dayton.
Fantastic.
And he had his first class Tuesday night and called me up 10:15, just was on fire. You know, he loved it. And just
great.
And goes back at night, you know. But for the ones that are looking to look at a career in firefighting, or the young ones in their career right now, what advice do you have for them entering this or just starting out in that career? You know, what should they, where do they keep their eye on which ball?
Let me start by saying congratulations to your son. I know, and thank you. Your audience probably doesn't know, you know, he's, if I'm not mistaken, you told me he is a U.S. military veteran that's served our country. And
yes,
I certainly, my hat's off to him. Appreciate his service and what he's done for us as a country. But it's, in my humble opinion, it's, you know, one of the greatest jobs in the world. Be able to, you know, serve others and serve your community. I have, I don't know if you can see it behind me.
Yes.
I have a picture with Marcus Luttrell from Navy SEAL, who was the lone survivor and lost his entire unit. And I had the chance to meet him and wanted to thank him for his service. And he was so humble that, we want to thank you as a firefighter, because if it wasn't for first responders taking care of business here on the homestead, we couldn't do what we need to do, you know, battling terrorism and enemies abroad. But with regards to those coming on the job, I think, I hate to sound shameless, selling a book. We are giving, you know, proceeds to the First Responder Center of Excellence, which is aimed at firefighter health and wellness and further research. So whether it's our book through Fire Engineering, Surviving Fire Service, or however they get the information, and there's a ton, I mean, LifeScan at www.lifescanwellness.com. We have a whole toolbox of cancer, behavioral health resources, cardiac, however they get the information. I think when I came on the job, we didn't have that resource. Right. We didn't have a neatly bound, you know, resource of here's all the occupational health risks that we currently know. And it's going to change, right? I mean, we now, you know, my big thing I've been preaching lately is long-term health effects to first responders who have been exposed to COVID. We have no idea what that may include.
Right.
But here's what we know now. We know you have higher risks of behavioral health issues, higher risks of cancer, higher rates of obesity. And here's what you need to do starting day one in your career, not just you, but for your family, for your loved ones, so you can enjoy the greatest job on the earth, and do it in a manner, you know, listen, there's inherent risk in everything. There will always be inherent risk in firefighting, in first responder, and public safety, but knowledge is power. And giving our new folks that are coming on, our recruits, giving that information at the earliest stage of their career, then they know what actions they have to take. And they can also become the warriors, if you will, for continuing this change in culture towards a healthier and safer fire service. So I know that to be out of all the things that, you know, they're going to have to learn and deal with and develop. I know my belief is that the greatest thing we can do for them is in part with to them that knowledge on their protecting their own health, and that goes for, you know, total health.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's the one thing that looking back when I think many, if not most of us started, really again, you know, a lot of this information we didn't have at the time.
Right.
But we didn't do any of us a service by not, you know, giving that up front and focusing on what we did know. So what today we know a lot more, you know, largely through folks like yourself and others that, you know, there's been more health and wellness research done in the last decade.
Yeah.
In the fire service than the previous two centuries. So we've packaged all that up, and we need to make sure we're getting it out. It can't be a book on a shelf or a website that no one goes to.
Yeah.
You know, it's programs like you're doing now with your podcast, and we've got to get the word out to folks. I believe even before they join the service, right? Because you may have folks that say, "Wow, I'm going to have higher rates of cancer by 9%." I'm going to have higher rates of sudden cardiac death. I'm going to have PTSD rates. I mean, some studies cite a number of 37%, which is similar to returning combat vets. Maybe the service isn't for me. Maybe I want to be over here, you know, doing some different profession or calling or vocation. And that's okay. I think, you know, an educated consumer is, as they say, is our best customer. So, I think if I had to impart one thing, it's that giving your son and anyone else coming up, you know, forewarned is forearmed.
Yes. And, you know, I had someone ask me recently, why would you introduce the fire service to your son when you know all the risks out there?
Yeah. Right? No, it's
and I, my response was, actually, and you've touched on it about we're so much more knowledgeable now, and the data that we have of line of duty deaths and the illnesses and all that is driven by decades of not necessarily even recognizing the data or recognizing we need behavioral changes. You know, so what the person going in today, yes, you are going to have a higher risk of cancer. However, here's what you can do now.
Sure.
So that when we have numbers 20 years from now and get the data, oh my gosh, it's dropped because of everything we do. You know, same thing with
God's ears. Absolutely. You know, just made a note. Don't let me forget this. I made a note to send your son. I'll have to get his information. Send your son a copy of Surviving the Fire Service. So I really want him to have that and share that with him.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Make sure you put that signature on it, though.
I'd be happy to do that in my office.
Absolutely. But yeah, so that's where I was like, well, I'm excited to have him join because, you know, we can focus, you know, and I can work with him, make sure, you know, hey, you're going to learn in school all the mechanics of it. And, you know, operationally, you pay attention, you do your best. But outside of that, then, you know, because he loves fitness, he loves nutrition. And I'm like, you know, you can be one of the catalysts and step forward and help others that need help that don't have that drive and all that. I go, you're going to have I'm so happy for him. Yeah. He's going to have a beautiful experience.
I'm excited for him as well. That's wonderful. And I think you hit the nail, you know, just perfectly on the head right there with, you know, we do have a safer fire service and it's becoming more and more so. I mean, you know, you look at cancer. I mean, likely that was an issue perhaps some time ago and we just haven't shined the light on it through
right
and others. So we're learning more and we're getting safer and healthier and it's going to make for even a better career for those that are joining right now.
Yeah. Well, let me wrap this up with you, Chief. And I would like to ask, is there anything that I did not ask you that you would like to talk about or spend more time on?
You know, I think you've covered, most of the thing I wanted to share with your audience today. And I appreciate the opportunity. I know this was very unscripted, and your questions always are very insightful and probative. And I think, from my perspective, get to the heart of where we're at, health and wellness wise, and work-life balance and, you know, just that whole wellness approach. So been my honor to spend, you know, the time with you today and want to, again, thank you for, I know this is a new podcast that you've started and it's through these type of venues as well as others that we're able to continue to get the message out. So thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you are very welcome. And I appreciate it, Chief LaDuke, for being my guest and opening up and sharing, you know, your personal stories on this show. And I do want you to know I very much appreciate you and love all the work you're doing and the teaming up and the camaraderie and everything. And it is an exciting time to be involved because, I mean, you know, the tide's turning. People are going to get healthier. They're going to, and I'm striving and pushing to where it's like, you know, my biggest message is I want you to be successful at work and at home, you know, because
it's absolutely
otherwise.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, we don't want to regret anything. So that's absolutely what it's about. So thank you again, Chief. And I appreciate you being my guest on the podcast.
Thanks.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.